Everyone, this is Faded Mates, and we are live together.
In the same room, like, a foot and a half apart from each other?
It's amazing. We've never done this.
We never have done it.
It's pretty great.
It is great.
So we're in my Sarah's hotel room. You can hear I have, like, conference voice. I feel like it's very low and throaty.
It's very sexy.
Thank you.
Sarah, you guys, is like an energizer bunny. Like, I watched her yesterday, and it was like kind of like, at one point I had to just leave and read for a while. So I get home last night and I'm telling Daryl, I was like, at one point I just had to leave and read for a while. And he was like, wait, what? And I was like, well, I just got real exhausted.
That does feel like the most honest, real book conference attendee.
Lots of people were doing experience. It. I think it was fine.
Yeah. It's like, if you ever want a room full of introverts, go to a book conference.
And I mean, I'm pretty extroverted, but it was still nice to have that. But it's like, we're tired, and I'm tired, so I can only imagine how you feel.
Yeah, I'm tired. It's Sunday morning. We had planned to do it yesterday, but then, like, I looked up and the whole day was over.
Yeah.
And I want to say, though, we have seen so many Faded Matesers.
Yeah, it was really awesome. It was amazing. Sarah was, and Sophie Jordan were doing a session called Bananas Books, and at the beginning, Sarah's like, how many people listen to Faded Mates? And I feel like the entire room, it was awesome. And then we had best friend Kelly make stickers and buttons. We had, 50 stickers? No, 100 stickers and 50 buttons, and they were gone.
Instantly.
Yeah. The buttons especially were gone within, 5 seconds.
So, it was amazing.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Lesson learned, the next time we go to a thing,
more.
We will bring many more buttons and stickers.
Yeah.
But you guys, your faces are so awesome, and we love you.
It was really
fun. And thank you for listening. That's so amazing, because I think Jen and I, until, yesterday, were like, it's maybe just the two of us.
A couple other people who like us a lot.
Exactly. And then I do want to say the best thing was, though, the person who waited in my line and delivered me Wicked Abyss.
Oh, yeah.
A Cressley Cole book. To sign. And then I opened it up and Jen had already signed it.
I know. She was like, do you mind signing this? And I was like, I no. But I was like, you know, I had nothing to do with the production of this book. But it was really cool. It was really cute. Because, like, yeah, it's her listening of it is going to be something. It was really cool, actually.
Yeah, it was really cool. And I want to apologize to Cressley if that at all seems weird. It did feel a little bit weird to me. But, you know, you got to give the readers what they want, first of all. And second of all, she told me, I hope Cressley is listening to this part. She told me that her dream is to meet Cressley and have her sign that book. So yeah. Now I'm just always really happy to be a part of people meeting their favorite authors.
Yeah, it's really cool. Well, and just yesterday, if you have never been to a conference about the thing you love, whether it's Comic-Con or KissCon or whatever, it really is an amazing experience, because anybody you meet is going to have this shared love of whatever it is you're there for. I struck up so many conversations with people I didn't know about books we loved, about readers, you know, like what it's like to be there and meet authors in person. And it was pretty great.
Yeah.
So.
Well, by now you know that you're listening to Faded Mates.
I'm Jen.
I'm Sarah. And we are together at last.
Yes. So we have a bunch of questions for you. We're going to keep this to 1 hour just because I think we're both tired and need to eat some breakfast.
Yeah. And I have to be at a breakfast.
So oh, yeah. I'm going to crash that breakfast.
It's fine.
I was like, by the time anyone at Avon hears this, that will have already happened and they won't be able to stop me. So we have a bunch of questions, and I thought we'd maybe start off. Actually, there was one that was actually really funny that came through on Twitter that might be a funny one to start with, which it was from, and I didn't really write down everybody's name with the question, so sorry about that. But how big is your TBR pile at its worst or best, depending on how you look at it?
Well, for me, it's definitely best, and it's massive. It's massive because literally every time I read so much, and I try, I read at least 300, 350 books a year, but for every book I read, I've probably downloaded two.
Yeah.
because I literally see somebody will tweet a line from a book, or somebody will say, like, oh, if you've never read this author, you should read this. Or someone will recommend me something super bananas, like happened this morning with Sophie Jordan. And suddenly, like, those books just end up, I just buy them and put them on my e-reader. And
yeah.
And I'll never, ever get to all of them. And that is a great sadness.
Yeah, it is. I definitely have hundreds. At the beginning of the year, like right around, like in between Christmas and New Year's, I really decided to try and tackle the TBR on my Kindle. So I actually made a bunch of collections, like different collections.
That's smart.
So it's like TBR Contemporary, TBR Historical, TBR Romantic Suspense, and then there's one category that's called TBR Desperate Times, which are, like, books that I never really think I'm going to get to. Like, it's, like, the end of times, like, but my Kindle still works. So I could just still keep reading.
And a lot of
Last those, Woman Standing. Yeah, a lot of those are books that I, like, I don't know why I bought them, right? It was, like, a Kindle sale. They were free. I think when I came back to romance, I was really just like, oh, it's free. It's 99 cents. I should just download it in case. But now I realize that that's, like, you really have to, the one thing I've stopped doing is I will buy books on sale, but they have to be books I had already had my eye on. So, like, Syncopation by Anna Szabo came out this week for, like, 99 cents, and that had been, like, I'd had my eye on it. So, but I think after yesterday at KissCon, where I feel like I need to stop. So I think I'm going to go on a book, I say this now, I'm going to go on a little bit of a book buying hiatus.
Sure you are.
Sure.
Until our next interstitial.
Yeah.
Until this interstitial.
So lots is the answer. Hundreds of books for sure. Okay, so let's see.
Jen is managing all the questions.
I'm managing
because
the questions.
I have been very remiss in reading all the questions online.
A lot of the questions are about, like, the future of the series.
Well, let's talk about that then, because we know nothing. So just talk out our asses for a little bit.
But there are go ahead.
I want to just qualify. I know I qualified this in the early days on the podcast, but I feel like it's worth sort of re-upping this as a statement. Cressley and I don't know each other. So I really do this as a labor of love. It's not even labor. It's just love.
Right.
I love this series. I think Cressley, I learned from Cressley as a writer every single book. I've joked on Twitter that while I was writing Brazen and the Beast, there were definitely moments where Immortals After Dark edged in and, you know, Beast threatened to take someone's head or something, and my editor sort of gently crossed it out. Like, we're not in an immortal world. We're in a real world now, Sarah. So,
yeah.
So really, honestly, when we say we don't know anything, we really know nothing.
Well, and one thing that's kind of, as I've gone back and reread, there's like the obvious pairings we're all waiting for. You know, will Nyx and Orion have a book? You know, what's going to happen with Fury? I mean, I think they're like, you know, Monroe's book is supposed to come out at the end of May. You know, I think there's all, like, you know, those are books people have been waiting for. It's clear that maybe the setup is there. But when you go back and reread.
So many
secondary characters that are, or tertiary characters that are so interesting that you're like, I could see this, this being a book. So, yeah, we don't know.
We don't. Do you want to speculate? Are there questions that we want to speculate on?
I feel like a lot of them are about, like, Nyx.
Yeah. You know, I think I said this on the Lothair episode, which by the time we do this will already be out. But I will never... The one thing about this series that would not surprise me is if Nyx actually doesn't get a book.
Yeah.
I know that Cressley has said many times, like, publicly, that Nyx is the final book in the series. And first of all, absolutely, Nyx has to be the final book in the series.
Right.
She can't be the next book and then it keeps going.
Right.
But it would never surprise me if she just didn't, because she's almost too powerful. Like, she's too far beyond heroine.
Yeah.
I mean, she's too far beyond hero. So
she's too far beyond our conception of, like, right? Her brain is, like, often described as just such a strange place.
We've seen her mad. We've seen her... you know, furious. We've seen her sad. We've seen her wistful. We've seen her full of regret. We've seen so many sides of Nyx that I think it will be a very difficult book to write if it gets written. And it would never surprise me if we ended up seeing that Cressley's endgame is some kind of
right,
become some kind of thing where Nyx just is all, well, I mean, she becomes a goddess is the theory, right?
Right. Well, have you read, I have not read the original Sinners series by Tiffany Wrights, but yep. I did see something really interesting where there's a character named Soren, and a lot of people were like, will you ever write from Soren's point of view? And she, I think it's on Goodreads, actually. And she said no, because he essentially is like a godlike figure. And she just couldn't imagine embodying that in, mm-hmm. in an authorial voice. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if Nyx and Orion will be similarly difficult to...
Yeah. I mean, certainly if there is anybody who could match Nyx, it's Orion.
Right. Absolutely.
Right. But it elevates the... I don't even know. I mean, and this is why I think Cressley's one of the very best, because I think of myself as being a fairly, you know, competent writer, and I can't imagine how you, the whole world would have to be elevated along right. with them.
Right.
It now couldn't exist in the same.
Right. Now we've seen her ramp up space quite a few times, right? So it's not enough.
It would be movement four.
Movement four. Movement 400.
Yeah. Movement, whatever. Yeah, movement right. N, the, yeah. the Nyx Orion movement.
Yeah. So it's an interesting question, but I think one that, it's almost like be careful what you wish for, too, I will say. One of the things I was talking about yesterday with several people who were here, just in general, is how difficult it is to really pull off a series, like sort of that, like you've been building up to this person for three books. I feel like it works, but when, you know, it's five books in or six books in, or if it's 25 books in, so it's also, you know, would it even satisfy us? It's such a meta question.
Yeah, although Lothair satisfied us.
Oh, yeah.
So, sure. We'll see. I spoke with somebody yesterday who was, like, really not into the Morior.
Yeah.
Or the Dacians. And I, of course, am very pro-Morior. And I was very surprised by that. I was surprised that there are people who just want to stay in the IAD universe.
Yeah, I like the Morior a lot, too, but I think it's because I really do feel like if a series is going to sustain itself for, like I said, the stakes have to get higher the more books there are if you want to keep people interested.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a really interesting...
I mean, I think it's also about keeping Cressley interested, right?
Oh, absolutely.
There are only so many,
yeah,
werewolf. So many werewolves in yeah. New Orleans.
Right, right. A really interesting question, though, I guess related to that was, like, do we think the Morior will try and hire Lothair in the future? And I would say, like, it's kind of the setup, as I understand it, is more Team Vertas versus the Morior. So I actually don't think that will happen. I think there'll be an opposition.
Yeah, I think part of the challenge, right, is that Cressley really loves a villain as hero. And she sort of established Lothair as the sort of the best hero, the best villain of the Provis army, right? Like he was right. there. He was their guy. And Christoph, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, although is Christoph Provis?
I don't know if he's either. Really?
What is he even?
They're just,
whatever.
Yeah.
He's
the keep away kid.
Yeah.
Like, right. I mean, some, you know, they just don't, he doesn't even really know what's going on.
Yeah. But he's sort of, so Lothair, when she brought Lothair into the fold as a hero, she kind of lost the Provis army as villain.
Yeah.
Right? Because suddenly their biggest arm is no longer.
Yeah.
Right? He's on Team Vertas. And everything else in the Provis army has been established as these like base disgusting creatures. Literally disgusting.
Yes,
not
right.
like, I mean, they're like pus.
Yes,
pus demons
and
evil,
right, yeah.
And pus animals and things. And so I think that she had to up the ante and deliver us new villains.
Yeah.
And she did that through the Morior. But what's interesting is that then she made the Morior heroic.
Right.
So.
Well, and I think that's like a general kind of romance problem that I think about a lot, which is we're interested in like, what's dark, like, right, we're interested in, like, that dark side of humanity, like, whatever that is, right? But we also, in order for it to be a romance, need people to be heroic. And so, you know, you see then like motorcycle romances where like really they're helping children or what, you know, and it's like sort of a really interesting thing that I think romance does, where we take something that is like clearly really problematic on its face and want very badly to like redeem it through love. And I think that's something like, I don't know how I feel about it, right? And I think there are I think personally there are limits to that, and I think there are other readers for whom there are not limits to that.
Yeah, I can't see the end game with Orion at all.
I can't either.
So I don't entirely understand what the Moriora is doing.
Well, and I will predict, I don't think we're going to necessarily get an answer for it in Monroe's book.
Oh no, I don't think so.
I think that's. We've put a pin in it.
I think she's going back to Monroe to tidy things up. But yeah. That said, I mean, she put Monroe... She's writing Monroe now for a reason.
Right.
So...
Right.
We'll see...
What that is.
And I think you and I will have more thoughts about that when we've read McReeve again.
Yeah,
because I haven't read any of the books, with the exception of Sweet Ruin. I haven't read any of the books since we've started.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
So I'd like to see where we are with Monroe before we talk more about that. But Monroe is coming at the end of May, according to Cressley's, you know,
newsletter,
social media,
I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is actually a really fun question. So that's kind of a serious one, which is if... it said, if you wrote fanfic, what top three fanfic stories would you write about the IAD universe?
Well, I mean, I would write DeShazer's Christmas novella with... I would write DeShazer and, oh my god, Dolly's Christmas novella. Dolly the Nymph, DeShazer the Demon. I love them so much. DeShazer turns up in so many books now.
Yeah, I really
that
like
I had
him.
Sort of not realized, but I love him and I love how cool he is. And what I really want is like all the Vertas heroes sitting around in like Christmas sweaters.
Yes, drinking brew.
Which feels very fanficky to me because I know there's like a whole world of fanfics that's just like people do. We're
at O'Hara, everybody.
We're in a hotel at O'Hara. You're going to hear planes flying overhead. Which was actually very comforting overnight for me because I have LaGuardia at home.
See, there you go.
It's just like home. Anyway, so that's what I would do. I know there's the whole fanfic world of, you know, heroes who are just doing normal things.
Yeah.
And that's what I would want.
One idea I think you and I would both love that we've talked about that I'll just say for both of us.
Mm-hmm. I know what you're going to say. And
is like, yes, the IAD heroes in group therapy. Like in Declan and Lothair talking to like Lachlan about being good husbands or, you know, fathers or whatever. Oh, that's really funny to me. And actually, like, just because it seems like it would have to literally be in like a, like they'd all have to be like locked to their chairs. It would just end up in a brawl.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But I would say that another one I would love is like a day in the life of Loa's shop.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, just Loa hanging out.
Just Loa hanging out and, like, who comes in and who comes out and, like, what, like, really interesting problems and, you know, the witches come in and are selling their new potions and wares and, you know, like, lure teenagers who, like, fucked up and broke a candlestick at home and they're trying to fix it and, you know, like, I just feel like a day in the life of Loa's shop would be a really... fascinating, like, look at, again, like, sort of that day in the life of the lore.
Yeah. Loa, the reality TV show.
Yeah, like, right.
That's cool. And then I have a few sort of erotica ones, but one of the erotica ones that I'd really like to see is, and we haven't gotten there yet, but when I figured out that Josie, the heroine of Sweet Ruin, is part phantom, and she could, like, she could become invisible and like trace inside of people. I was like, well, if they don't, you know, if she doesn't make him masturbate while she's in there, then that's just a missed opportunity.
How had I never thought of that? Your dirty mind is unparalleled.
You guys, spoiler, she doesn't, but like maybe I'll write that fanfic before our episode. Also, there's got to be IAD fanfic online. I mean, there is a Facebook group.
Yeah.
Which is all, everybody yeah. who's a member of this Facebook group, you guys, you should join it. It's wacky. Everyone who is a member of this Facebook group is there as a,
like a character
in the IID universe, and they post as the characters and they comment as the characters, and it's actually really lovely and fun.
Yeah. There must we'll be IID fanfic. I'm terrible at I get really overwhelmed at the, fanfic seems overwhelming to me, like drinking out of a fire hose, and I feel like what I would love is at some point I'll meet a friend who like understands how to do it better and I'll learn.
Yeah.
But right now my mountain TBR is keeping me from scaling that next mountain of fanfic.
You write IAD fanfic or if you are reading it online, please let us know and we'll put notes. We'll put links everywhere.
One of the best sessions I was at yesterday was actually about like fanfic and the power of like fandom. And I love that sense of like a shared love of a common world and, mm-hmm. and what it feels like to like imagine stories that happen in there. So that's a fun question. Okay, Sarah, this one's really for you. And I would love for you to answer this too, which is a couple of episodes ago, you talked about Lisa Claypass being a genius with like talismans.
Mm-hmm.
And can you say more about that?
In every Lisa Claypass book, there is a talisman of the hero's love for the heroine. And sometimes it's always something, it varies by book, but it's always something that ultimately becomes a gift, some kind of gift or some kind of representation of the heroine for the hero. So in her, in Dreaming of You, it's Sarah's glasses.
Sure.
He steals them from her.
Right.
And then he just keeps them with him because he can't have her, but they become his heart. He literally holds them in the inside pocket of his jacket.
Well, and I also think it's like the fact that it's glasses or spectacles. It's like she's just teaching him to see the world in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. And then in the first of the Ravenel series, there's a secondary romance in the first book in the Ravenel series where the secondary hero is gifted an orchid by the secondary heroine, and then he has to learn to keep it alive, right? Because orchids are very temperamental.
Yeah.
And then when it comes back to, when it comes to their book, which is the next book in the series, he's been keeping this orchid alive. And it's such a, like, clear metaphor.
Right.
And then Cam Rohan has a ring, a thumb ring, that... you know, he never takes off, but he, but is a, oh, I mean, ultimately it comes out in a sex scene. Like he uses it in a real dirty way. But, this ring like is representative of his relationship with his heroine.
Oh.
And then, in the most recent Lisa Claypass book, Devil's Daughter, it's a book. That they've been passing back and that she sent to her childhood love with notes in it. And he stole it from her childhood love.
Oh, wow.
And kept it over the years. And then he returns it to her. And it's just, in my mind, every single Lisa Claypass book has one of these items that sort of represents the love of between these two people and the growth that they have to go through in order to get to a place where they can love each other. And it's magnificent. And nobody does talismans like Lisa does, because she does them in this like seamless way where they're just a part of the story.
Right, right, right.
Unlike, you know, Cressley, for example, uses talismans, but she uses talismans in a very like clear, concrete way where she sort of says to you as a reader overtly, this is the talisman.
Right.
And then we move it forward.
Right.
Lisa doesn't do that. Lisa, all of her talismans are really...
Yeah. Embedded.
Yeah. Deeply embedded.
Okay. This is another craft question that I think I want you to talk about, but I want to also talk about as a reader. I think this will be like interesting for us to discuss, which is, again, a couple episodes ago, Sarah talked about like how the point of view in a sex scene should be from the person who needs to consent the most for whatever that means. And I think we can actually like blow this out and talk about more than just sex scenes, right? But like there are certain like life events that have to be told from one character and how it feels like a bit of a betrayal when it's told from another character. Mm-hmm. And I think those can be like author's choices, but often I feel like they're mistakes, like as a reader. And I'll give like a couple examples.
Please.
I read a recent book where a character suffers a miscarriage, and most of the like processing of the miscarriage is done from the hero's point of view.
Oof.
And I really struggled with that. And I understood why, right? I mean, it was like this moment where he like realized how much he loved her. But that then felt a little like fridging, which if you don't know what that is, it's sort of like something bad happens to the heroine is a comics term, so that the hero can understand something about his own feelings. Mm-hmm. And so like that was an example of a book where I really struggled. I was like, I think miscarriages really there's something that happened to a woman. And yes, it happens to a man, like, right, the partner too. But or like there was a book I read where a female heroine was an Olympian and she wins the gold medal. But like the hero is the coach and he kind of like processes it. And I was like, no, man, that has to be hers. It was her accomplishment. So I think there's a lot of times where point of view, especially in books with like dual first person point of view, can really like skip at like a time that as a reader feels wrong.
Yeah. So there is a craft adage that I think is very valuable. And I would say this. I would say I have a lot of things to say about this. But point of view is very hard in the sense that invariably if you are writing – and by you, I mean me. If I am writing and I'm really stuck in a scene and it's going slow and I can't figure out what's going wrong, invariably it's because I'm writing it in the wrong point of view.
Interesting.
As I write, all my books are like Cressley's close third point of view. So there's a not omniscient narrator narrating. That narrator is narrating like in a deep in the psyche of the one of the characters. And like Cressley, I move back and forth. So I tend to be pretty even. Like chapter one is the heroine, chapter two is the hero, and it goes on like that. Although sometimes it just doesn't work out that way. But the adage in writing is that the POV of the scene should be written in the POV of the character who has the most to lose. Mm. And I think that's a really nice, succinct way of explaining what you're talking about, which is the character who is, and maybe it's the most to lose, maybe it's the most impact.
Right.
A miscarriage is always going to have a higher, or I mean, not always.
I'm going to say always.
But it feels like it should be, you know, I would say a huge percentage of the time.
Yeah.
It should be it is going to have a bigger impact on the heroine than it is on the hero by virtue of it happening in her own body.
Right.
So yeah, that feels like a misstep to me. It feels like a kind of a rookie step. Yeah. I don't know what this book is, but
yeah,
it sounds like a kind of rookie mistake.
Right.
It might have been a choice that was to show the hero like full of love. Like,
right.
Full of preparation for his own future, coming to terms with like the idea of a family. I can see why you would.
Sure.
Like, we love secret baby stories because we love to see heroes broken down by the idea of like familial love.
Right.
But that does seem like a little bit of a rookie mistake. But that said, I would say the sex scenes, sex is really interesting. I really like writing sex in the male point of view because I think, again, it sort of shows the hero vulnerable in some way.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Because for me, when I write a sex, I mean, obviously, when the hero and heroine have sex in my books, like, that's it. He's a goner. Like, he's never.
Right.
He's done.
Well, and that's romance, right? If it's right. Right.
But I would say that when I said consent, what I was talking about is that if there's a question of the sex being rough, I'm sure this, I can only imagine I said this during like the Sabine and Rydstrom episode.
Yeah, probably.
But if we're talking about sex being rough or like challenging or like Mr. and Mrs. Smith style, like you know, Regan and Declan, it has to be in the point of view of the character who could be non-consenting, right? So that, for example, I wrote a book called Nine Rules to Break When Romancing Rick. I actually talked about this yesterday at the conference in a panel, where in that book, there's a scene where they're in an argument at the opera, and he says something really offensive. The hero says something really kind of mean and offensive and snarky to the heroine, and she, like, lashes out, and she tries to smack him, and he grabs her hand and then pushes her against the wall and kisses her. And, like, this is a classic romance moment.
Sure.
We've all seen it in movies and books forever. It's pure it for me. And I was talking about how I don't remember whose POV that scene is in, but I hope it's in Callie's, because for me, that scene only works if you know the heroine wants it.
Right.
You, the reader,
right,
know the heroine wants it.
Right. Well, and I would say that's one of the things I read a book where it's like male only point of view, and there's like, and it's at work, and you know, there, and I really at some point like found it problematic, because then you really have to trust that he's a reliable narrator.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something I actually usually worry about in romance. Like, I feel like one of the bargains like we make with you as authors make with us as readers is that there's no unreliable
narrator. This is all true.
Yes, this is all true. And yet I found him, you know, I was just really unlikable, and it was really, and so then it was like every interaction he's describing like, oh, she totally wanted it. And I as a reader was like, okay, but are you proving that
to
me? How do I know? Because it's because she is the employee and he is the employer.
Oh, see, that's so hard, because
right?
The power is automatically
yes.
offside.
Yeah, and then it's like, and then when you know, in the age of Me Too, you hear these men telling stories like, well, I didn't realize that she felt that way.
Right.
And I feel like authors, this is something that, you know, I enjoy male point of view a lot, but I do think it requires so much care.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy then to feel like, I feel like I'm reading about, like, this could be, who's that comedian, right? Who was just like, I didn't realize they didn't like it because they didn't say anything.
Louis C.K.,
right? So I found that, like, in the rise of, if you're writing a male-only point of view book where there's a power differential that vast, I'm not, that was hard for me.
But first person, single point of view is hard anyway.
Of
even
course.
If you're doing it from the other perspective, right? Like one of the, if you're doing it a single point of view heroine,
mm-hmm.
part of the challenge for romance readers when you do that is showing the hero in weakness too, right?
Yeah.
Like the moment that most romance readers adore is the moment where the hero is broken.
Right.
The dark night of the soul moment,
yeah.
right? Where there's a question, all is lost, and are they ever going to be together? And he feels broken. And there's a very clear, that moment works the best when you're in his head.
Yeah.
So if you're doing first person point of view just from the heroine, you never really see him.
Yeah. Right.
Break.
Right.
I mean, some people do this really beautifully, and I'm not saying that my qualifier for all of this is like in the hands of a great writer.
Anything can be done, of course.
But
these are more cautionary tales.
Yeah, but
right.
Like first person, the reason why first person is so challenging is because you never get an even inkling of
right
what the other person is thinking or feeling.
Yeah.
And it's not enough that we're seeing, I mean, it works both ways. Both what Jen is saying, which is, you know, if you can't see the heroine consenting in her own head,
right,
that's maybe a problem. But also, if you can't see the hero unraveling in his own head,
right,
is it even happening?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I do think
it's it's like ultimate show don't tell.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting, like, as a reader, then, like, I find, like, there's some series that are, like, they're all in a row and they're all female point of view, and I find I get real, it's really hard for me to read those back to back to back, because I've, at some point, it feels like something is missing that I, as a reader, mm-hmm. need. And it's not that the author has done anything wrong, no. right? This is so personal. But just I, as a reader, need to see both of those. So, yeah, for me, I do prefer dual point of view.
Yeah. Even in first person, yeah. I just prefer to see both characters.
Yeah. So I thought that was, like, an interesting question.
No, that's great. Thank you for that.
Okay. Do you want one that I think is, like, I don't even know how to address? I think it's kind of gnarly.
Always, yeah. I think it's gnarly.
I say that with love, but it's, so, you know, we've just finished Lothair, and so we've read about vampires feeding from...
All sorts of places.
And this question is, would we ever have a vampire hero going down on a heroine on her period? And I was like, no.
You think no.
You think yes. I mean, I don't know.
It is a little gnarly. I mean, it is interesting. Clearly, Cressley thinks no. Yeah. Wait, do vampires even have periods?
Well, that was my answer, was like, nobody has periods.
Nobody has a period. It's a magnificent world.
Well done, Cressley.
Cressley, I just realized the whole thing just ramped up a whole notch. No one has a period.
Well, because that was my answer, right? Valkyries wouldn't menstruate because they don't eat food.
Well, what if they do eat food? They must get pregnant right away.
Yeah,
there's
sure.
no way that not everybody's not super fertile.
Right, absolutely. Like, right? So, yeah, I mean, part of me is like, it's just menstruation.
This is moot.
Yes. Well, I don't know.
But I'm going to go with... Lothair for sure would have done it if Ellie had her period.
Yeah, he would have gotten off on
it. He's filthy.
Yeah.
And that's great.
Right.
And I would have been there for it.
A little more chewy. Fine.
Ew! Jen, I told you. So gross!
I told you it was gnarly!
That's, you shouldn't say
That's what we're talking about,
you
though.
You guys, that's super gross.
That's what we're talking about. That's why I was like, I don't want it. Right? I mean, he's not going to, like... Ugh, sorry.
Let's move forward.
Sorry.
Jen took it to a dark place.
It had to be done. Okay, Sarah, this is a great question. What's the coolest fan art or letter you've ever received?
I've received some really great letters. Like, really great letters. I've received some letters that have really moved me, too. Like, letters from women who have been in abusive relationships, who have escaped abusive relationships and found themselves again through romance novels and through mine. I mean, like, nothing beats that.
Oh,
right?
I can't even imagine, yeah.
That's the best one. My favorite that's not, you know, sad. Like, yeah. Although that's very hopeful, but, like, I hate that
sure.
happened. I have a woman... My probably most favorite is from a woman who sent me a letter, and she was really sweet, and she said, I love my husband very much, but he's very boring. Mm. And we didn't have a very exciting love life, and I started to really think that maybe I'd made a terrible mistake and that we would never have a good love life. And then one day he picked up One Good Earl Deserves a Lover, and he read it because he knew I was reading romance novels all the time. And then you changed our love life. That book changed our love life. And And my husband came home from work that day, and I was like, I saved marriage today. What did you do? So I hope that woman is listening, because I'm thrilled, and that,
yeah, that's amazing.
You know, like, I've had some, like, not pleasant responses to sex scenes that are kind of gross and icky from like people that I know,
right?
And that is a moment where I was like, this is great. I'm really glad you guys are boning hard over there.
That's awesome, though. Yeah.
And then fan art. You know, I don't get a lot of fan art.
Do better, everybody.
I have somebody, there's a writer who, or an artist who's done some inspirational Rules of Scoundrels art, which is really cool, and always has, like, playing cards or dice in it, which is cool. But yeah.
Okay.
If you're an artist and you feel so inspired.
Yeah, no, some fan art from our podcast is by a woman, and we've actually linked to show notes, and she is like doing watercolor paintings of the heroines of IAD, and amazing. They're amazing.
Her NYX is awesome.
It's kind of amazing. So, but not really about Sarah's book, so we'll look forward
to that. Well, that's fine. It's allowed.
Okay, mine's way faster, right? What would I prefer, Chicago-style pizza or Chicago-style hot dogs? Pizza.
What's a Chicago-style hot
dog? Okay, listen, I need to tell you I don't like pickles, and a Chicago-style hot dog is like, it's like real specific. So it has a poppy seed bun that's like split on top, right? Rather than on the side. And then you like, there's like a pickle spear. So it's like along the length of the entire hot dog. And also celery salt is involved. But I don't like pickles. So I feel like I could do everything but that. Like there's a lot of other shit too. Like it's like full of stuff.
It's fully loaded.
Yeah. And I like a hot dog just fine. But like the pickle is a deal breaker. So pizza for sure. But eating a piece of Chicago-style pizza is like a meal in and of itself. Like, you have to really clear a few hours afterwards for napping.
Well, next time I come, I would like to have both of those things.
Okay, for sure.
We'll record it.
There you go. And I'll be like, let me take this pickle off and eat the rest of it.
I love a pickle, so I think I'll be fine with that.
Okay, yeah, you would like it.
Okay.
Let's see. How much more time do we have
for that one?
Oh, yeah. This is one that's like, this speaks to me deep in my soul. Why is every female 5'6 thought of as tiny? And why is every male 6'6 LOL? I was like, yeah, speak my love language right there.
I mean, I'm all for males that are 6'6, but.
Well, you know what I guess I would say is, it's an archetype. Right? And it's interesting how the archetype of the male being 6'6", even though it's just as formulaic, it like, whatever, it's fine. But I do struggle with all of the heroines being like petite and tiny. And in fact, I just restarted McReeve and was kind of like, oh, I can't stand Chloe. And Sarah's like, why? And I was like, I just was like, she's this like baller soccer player, but somehow she's still this tiny little pixie. And I was like, you know, she would have fucking thighs of steel. And I do struggle with this. But you know, I did not. And everybody's white. So it's, you know.
I do. The one thing that I wish is that, and this is true of all Immortals books.
Yeah.
It's that they become, like, perfect specimens.
Yeah.
Right? Which is sort of like you said, it's an archetype. It comes from the very beginnings of romance where the hero could span the heroine's waist mm-hmm. with his, like, mm-hmm. massive hands.
One thing I think about a lot that I think you like threw off as like an aside, but I think it's really profound truth, is that all of those tropes that were part of like the early part of historicals have really like migrated over to paranormal in some way. And so the idea that the hero is just like broader, bigger, stronger than every heroine is something like physically, I think is something that we really see in paranormals a lot.
Yeah. But unlike other paranormals, what we're seeing here is heroines who are equally as strong. They're just small.
They're just small.
Which is kind of awesome.
Sure. Right. Like your strength is not really determined by your size. And they're smart and they're savvy and there's all these other amazing things about them. But yeah, as a general rule, it's kind of not my favorite. Oh, that's a great question. Okay.
So I'm looking at the list. What is something, Jen, what is something that immediately makes you give up on a book? What's immediately?
Yeah.
And then what's the thing?
I would say immediately for me is a chapter or two.
Same.
Right? Some sort of blatant like racism or sexism. Right? Unless I know I'm, like, going into some motorcycle club romance and it's, like, which, you know, and then you just know that that's what it is. It's often not about, like, writing. Like, sometimes I'll be like, oh, yeah, there was a typo on page one and I just noped out. I don't even notice shit like that. I read seventh graders' work for a living. You have to really, like, I don't even really pay attention to those things. I'm trying to think about, I would say if the premise seems like, I think I'm obviously I was interested in it because I downloaded the book or whatever. But if I start and the premise is like really I'm like, oh, I don't like it, or it's execution. But it's, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like, honestly, it's like racism and sexism, right?
That's, yeah. I mean, well, those feel obviously. Like obvious
yeah,
to me.
Yeah, right. I don't know. That's a great question.
That it really is. For me, it's definitely within the first, like, two chapters.
Yeah.
And you have to have sucked me in.
Yeah, so right. I'm bored.
That's the problem. It's boredom for me almost always.
Well, and for me, it's often, like, very, you know, I wish I could read every book from start to finish, but realistically, I'm going to put a book down, right? I'm going to get called away and be doing other things. And so if I have no interest to pick it back up, right? And I would say then for me, like really explicitly English teacher talk, it's too much exposition, right? So you have like, you're setting the stage, there's too many characters, you're introducing people. Too many characters actually is a real deal breaker for me. I'm like, have you met the hero yet? Heroine? Why have you met 10 other people before, right? I sometimes get overwhelmed by too many characters.
That's for sure. We've had a lot of questions in person.
Yes.
And by text/email.
About
what happens after IAD.
So
for us, for Fated Mates.
Here's what I will say. We think this actually season one is just going to be like Cressley Cole's adult romances. We've had a lot of people ask about the Arcana Chronicles. I don't think we're going to do them.
Mm-mm.
So we're going to do the Game Maker series, and we're going to do the McCarrick brothers on the back end, I think, will be like the end to end, just mm-hmm. for fun.
And then forevermore.
Yeah.
For the rest of time.
Yes.
Anytime there is an IAD book.
We'll return to it.
We'll do
yes.
it.
I would say... Here's what I can tell you. We don't know what season two will be. I know what it won't be, though. A lot of people are like, oh, are you going to do another series next? And I don't think we are. I was like, maybe there'll be a season three where we pick another series. But I think season two is going to not be another series. But we've been talking about a lot of really cool ideas. None of them are formalized or like nailed down. So you're just going to have to wait.
But there will be a season two.
For sure.
Because once Fated Mates find each other.
Yeah, of course. And it's so fun for us.
It really is. It's great. And it'll still be similar where there will be episodes every week. And you'll get to hear us. Dulcet tones in your ears.
We joke about things a lot on Twitter, but we're never going to make an IAD board game. That's never going to happen.
Well, that also feels like it would be probably legally an issue.
Right? Do the Roth brothers come back? I really hope so.
I'm sure they do. Yes, when Kristoff comes back, they have to come back, right?
Yeah, right. Sarah, would you like it better if it was called New to Adulting?
No, I hate it.
Yeah, that's okay.
But that's maybe better.
Yeah.
New to Adulting.
How did we meet Twitter? Just like we met all of you. So thanks for listening to our AMA.
Yeah, you guys, we love you. Thanks for coming.
We do love you.
Chicago, thanks for coming out.
And we will see you next week, I think. I don't know what
next
comes.
Next week
is McCreeve.
Is McCreeve with Sierra Simone, isn't it?
I'm not sure what it'll be. Maybe. We'll see. But yeah, I think so. Right. Well, this is going to be after Lothair.
Right?
Yeah.
Does McCreeve come before the Game Makers series?
We are. Yeah.
We're going to post the calendar, you guys.
Yeah.
So you know what to be reading when.
But definitely read McCreeve next. We're going to put Shadow Seduction and Shadow's Claim together before Wicked Abyss and talk about them almost as like a separate series, because we think that's what they are. And then we will post the whole reading list. So have a great day, and it was awesome talking to Sarah in person.
Bye, guys. We love you.